Chapter 71. I am very sorry, but it cannot be helped. How can you be sorry for me, when you willfully keep open the grave? Oh no, that's not so, returned Grace, quickly, and moved to go away from him. But, dearest Grace, said he, you have condescended to come, and I thought from it that perhaps, when I had passed through a long state of probation you would be generous. But if there can be no hope of our getting completely reconciled, treat me gently, wretch though I am. I did not say you were a wretch, nor have I ever said so. But you have such a contemptuous way of looking at me, that I fear you think so. Grace's heart struggled between the wish not to be harsh, and the fear that she might mislead him. Cannot look contemptuous, unless I feel contempt, she said, evasively. And all I feel is lovelessness. I have been very bad, I know, he returned. But unless you can really love me again, Grace, I would rather go away from you forever. I don't want you to receive me again for duty's sake, or anything of that sort. If I had not cared more for your affection and forgiveness than my own personal comfort, I should never have come back here. I could have obtained a practice at a distance, and have lived my own life without coldness or reproach. But I have chosen to return to the one spot on earth, where my name is tarnished, to enter the house of a man from whom I have had worse treatment than from any other man alive, all for you. This was undeniably true, and it had its weight with Grace, who began to look as if she thought as he had been shockingly severe. Before you go, he continued, I want to know your pleasure about me, what you wish me to do, or not to do. You are independent of me, and it seems a mockery to ask that. Far be it from me to advise. But I will think it over. I rather need advice myself than stand in a position to give it. You don't need advice, wisest, dearest woman that ever lived. If you did, would you give it to me? Would you act upon what I gave? That's not a fair inquiry, said she, smiling despite her gravity. Don't mind hearing it, what you do really think the most correct and proper course for me. It is so easy for me to say, and yet I dare not, for it would be provoking you to remonstrances. Knowing, of course, what the advice would be, she did not press him further, and was about to beckon Marty forward and leave him, when he interrupted her with, Oh, one moment, dear Grace, you will meet me again? She eventually agreed to see him that day fortnight. Fitzpiers expostulated at the interval, but the half-alarmed earnestness with which she entreated him not to come sooner made him say hastily that he submitted to her will, that he would regard her as a friend only, anxious for his reform and well-being, till such time as she might allow him to exceed that privilege. All this was to assure her. It was only too clear that he had not won her confidence yet. It amazed Fitzpiers, and overthrew all his deductions from previous experience, to find that this girl, though as he had been married to him, could yet be so coy. Notwithstanding a certain fascination that it carried with it, his reflections were somber as he went homeward. He saw how deep had been his offense, to produce so great a wariness in a gentle, and once unsuspicious soul. He was himself too fastidious, to care to coerce her, to be an object of misgiving, or dislike to a woman who shared his home was what he could not endure the thought of. Life as it stood was more tolerable. When he was gone, Marty joined Mrs. Fitzpiers. She would fain have consulted Marty on the question of platonic relations with her former husband, as she preferred to regard him. But Marty showed no great interest in their affairs, so Grace said nothing. They came onward, and saw Melberry standing at the scene of the felling which had been audible to them, when, telling Marty that she wished her meeting with Mr. Fitzpiers to be kept private, she left the girl to join her father. At any rate, she would consult him on the expediency of occasionally seeing her husband. Her father was cheerful, and walked by her side as he had done in earlier days. Was thinking of you when you came up, he said. I have considered that what has happened is for the best. Since your husband is gone away, and seems not to wish to trouble you, why, let him go, and drop out of your life. Many women are worse off. You can live here comfortably enough, and he can emigrate, or do what he likes for his good. I wouldn't mind sending him the further sum of money he might naturally expect to come to him, so that you may not be bothered with him anymore. He could hardly have gone on living here without speaking to me, or meeting me, and that would have been very unpleasant on both sides. These remarks checked her intention. There was a sense of weakness in following them by saying that as he had just met her husband by appointment. Then you would advise me not to communicate with him, she observed. I shall never advise thee again. You are your own mistress, do as you like. But my opinion is that, if you don't live with him, you had better live without him, and not go shilly-shallying and playing bo-peep. You sent him away, and now he's gone. Very well, trouble him no more. Grace felt a guiltiness she hardly knew why, and made no confession. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.